Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Hello, Miss Keegan.
Hello, dear. How are you doing today?
Well, as we just established, we're both very, very tired. I think that's just kind of the usual with us when we record at night. We're just kind of like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's pretty much the standard. I was watching a TikTok where they were talking about how, like, comparing your tiredness is basically millennial culture at this point.
We're
all burnt out all of the time. Yeah, and this is no exception. And today, I only worked till 3 because it's Anthony and my anniversary today.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. 8 years. What's up?
Oh, wow.
I know. It's a long time. And we went to the Van Gogh, immersion Van Gogh exhibit.
Yeah, I saw the pictures on your story. It looks really cool.
It is so cool. I know that it's touring right now, so if it's coming to your city, I would highly suggest going and doing it. It was very, very interesting. It was really moving, and I really enjoyed it. So if you like art,
I can fuck with art.
Yes, but I even then, you know, even the fact that, like, I didn't even work a full day today, I'm just like, I'm spiritually exhausted.
Well, yeah, and then you went and, like, did something too. So you were still, like, doing stuff all day. It's not like you had, like, downtime, relaxing time. And it's your anniversary, so you're probably doing fun stuff. Like, yeah, that's exhausting.
Yeah, and my brother's here, and it just feels like I haven't stopped moving since I left town.
For real. You know, yeah, so when do you get a, like, vacation from the vacation?
I never. I can't remember the last
time. Your bachelorette party.
Oh, that's true. That is true. That is coming up. That's going to be a good time. Looking forward to that for sure. Oh, gosh. It's needed.
I haven't left really. I mean, I've left for, like, day trips the city of Los Angeles, but I haven't actually left the city of Los Angeles since June 2019.
I'm not going to lie to you, Madigan. LA is kind of grating on my nerves lately. It actually really is. I was looking at this graphic, and you might have seen it because I think I posted it on my stories, where it was showing the states that have lower populations than Los Angeles County. And there are only 6 states in the United States that have populations higher than Los Angeles County.
Higher? I thought you were going to say lower.
No,
higher?
No. Every other state in the union has a lower population than Los Angeles County. It's too many people.
It is too many people.
Enough.
Yeah, some of y'all go home. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going back to Minnesota. There's nothing for me there. I've been here 11 years. I've staked my claim. Some of y'all need to go home or stop moving here.
That's the thing. It's like, I feel hypocritical saying this because technically I'm a transplant, but both you and I have been in Los Angeles for over a decade at this point.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, look, we've paid our dues, okay? Mm-hmm. At this point.
We are Angelinos now and we're not going anywhere.
But sometimes I'm tempted to. Anyway.
For real. Anyway. I am so excited to be doing a What's in the News episode again. It's been so long.
It is exciting to be doing a What's in the News episode. I know that people have been reaching out on our social media asking when we're going to be back at these episodes.
And we're back.
And we are back. And the thing about these episodes in particular now, I know we've been putting up a lot of throwback episodes even on our main episode days. But these episodes in particular, because they are so time sensitive, it makes it very difficult to do them while traveling elsewhere. Especially when you are living in your conservative parents' house.
I thought that you weren't staying with your parents. I thought you were staying with other people.
I bounced around. I did, which also makes it difficult when you're bouncing around.
Well, I was going to say, then it's, like, impossible. You have no, like, real stakes to claim.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of, like, privacy or whatever, which makes it very hard to record a podcast. But I did spend the majority of my time with at my parents' house. But I did bounce around and I stayed at a couple different people's houses while I was in
Springfield. It would have been interesting to record our Uber feminist podcast in the home of your Uber conservative parents.
Oh, I've done it. I have done it before. The listeners don't know this, but I have recorded this podcast in my parents' house.
Do they just, like, have the ear to the door, like, what is she saying?
I mean, I don't know, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. Well, we have a lot to talk about. And I have a feeling that one of the things in particular both of us probably have notes on, I would really, really like to talk about what's going on in Afghanistan right now. I think it's really important. That
is the only thing I have notes on.
Okay. I also have some notes on the Delta variant because I think that we haven't really had a COVID check-in in a while.
Yes, that's true. I have about 4 pages of notes on Afghanistan, five pages.
Wonderful. So should we get started?
Yeah, because it is a really... There's a lot.
There's a lot
to discuss. It's complex and not complex at the same time.
Yeah.
And okay, so let's jump into it. I think in the future we should have an episode just solely on the quote unquote war on terror, because it was a colossal mess and a failure on every level. And even experts say that. That's not just my opinion. You know, there are people who were kind of leading this effort who have said publicly that you cannot say that it was a success in any way. So that's just something to kind of like keep in mind. And, you know, also something to keep in mind is that we have been in Afghanistan for 20 years since right after September 11th, 2001. Yep. But this war or wars have been going on in Afghanistan for the last 40 years. So there's a very large portion of the population in Afghanistan who have never known peace. They have never known peace.
They've never known peace. And a lot of people in Afghanistan have also never known what it's like not to have a U.S. military presence in their home either. So, you know, thinking about it that way, you know, thinking about my age when 9/11 happened and my age now, thinking about how accustomed we are to the changes that have been made in the United States and things like that. And then going and thinking about the people of Afghanistan, the children at that time growing up with it, how this is just their regular way of life now. And with pulling the troops, while I am so happy that we are seeing an end to this unbelievably senseless war, the way that we are going about it has become so dangerous to the Afghani people. And this was something that we were worried about to begin with, is that Biden was pulling these troops too quickly. I don't know if this is the best way to describe it, but it almost seems like it's kind of like a shock to the system, and they were weakened, and the Taliban was able to make their way back.
Right. Well, yes. So I do want to address that we discussed this on a previous What's in the News episode. We talked about the fact that Biden had said that by September 11th, 2021, he wanted to be pulled out. And I do believe that it was said on that episode. I know that I voiced a concern about, like, okay, I'm glad that that's happening. I've had a lot of friends and family members who have been deployed, seen long-term effects of deployment. I don't want to be keeping our troops over there indefinitely. However, there had to be a plan in place to ensure that the Afghani government, the new baby Afghani government, really in the long term of things, was able to kind of stand on their own, and that they were well equipped enough
to prevent the Taliban from coming in and taking over again.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. So in 2001, when George W. Bush was president, there's a reason why I'm saying that.
Oh my God, so many memes of like people blaming Biden, but then it was actually George Bush. But I saw one the other day, too, that was taking us all the way back to Reagan.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and, you know, I don't even say that necessarily to say it wasn't Biden's fault, because as I go through, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you who was president at the key points of this timeline, right?
Perfect.
And it's everybody. It's everybody. It's across both parties.
Yeah.
You know, mistakes were made just point blank, period. You know, so when George Bush was president, after 9/11, the Islamist militant group Al-Qaeda and its leader, Osama bin Laden, were identified as being responsible for the attacks on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. And bin Laden was in Afghanistan at the time and under the protection of the Taliban, which had held power in that region since 1996.
Uh-huh.
So when the Taliban refused to hand bin Laden over to the United States, we went in with the full force of our military to remove the Taliban from power. So I think that that's important to know. It wasn't, I feel like a lot of people are trying to frame this as this benevolent thing that we went in for the Afghani people. I personally do not believe that's true. I think we were pissed after 9/11 and we were like, you've got Osama bin Laden. We want him. You won't hand him over. So we are going to start a war with you.
Right. Because that was the thing that was so confusing to me as a kid, because the way it was being described is like, oh, we're going to go over and help their government. We're going to like essentially kind of colonize them and make them more Western and things like that. So in my mind, as like a 9-10 year old, I'm like, then why are we calling it a war? You know what I mean?
Well, because it was a war on terror, not a war on the Afghani people, right?
Right, like, exactly. That was the way, but in my head, framed. It never made sense, because I'm like, okay, the way you're describing this is more of like a peace mission, not as much of a war mission, where I think that you hit the nail on the head with talking about the fact that we wanted to punish the people who did the 9/11 terrorist attack. And that makes more sense to me as to why we would go into this war than just saying, oh no, we just want to help these people.
Well, and you know? Thing is, if helping the people of Afghanistan happened, then it was like, okay, that's a happy side effect. I don't think that the reason for going in was wholly benevolent, right? Like, if the Taliban had been like, okay, here's Osama bin Laden, here you go, then we would have been like, cool, deuces, right? We never would have gone in, like, you know.
Yeah, well, okay, so then we're talking about 2001. Do you have anything from before that talking about, because I know that Ronald Reagan, like, did some sort of training with the troops in Afghanistan or something. I have no notes on this. I was just wondering, is there like other evidence of U.S. presence in Afghanistan before then?
I don't personally know, so I don't feel like I can say. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. U.S. interference in the Middle East is long, you know, standing.
Were you about to say in the Midwest?
I don't know. I was going to say in the Mid-East, which, you know, sure.
Right? We can shorten it
down. In the Mideast.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, go on with what you were saying.
So, okay. So, like, we're going to go in. We're going to remove the Taliban from power. However, after we did that, so we went in, we did that. Hooray, right? We, like, dismantled the Taliban.
Yeah.
There were militant Taliban groups who reformed, and violence between U.S. soldiers and the Taliban continued ever since. So there has been violence. You know, the Taliban has inflicted violence against the United States troops who were there, civilians, etc. Because they rebanded pretty much right away.
Well, and I talk about the Taliban quite a bit when I covered Malala in one of the episodes about a year ago. In her story, she discusses, you know, what it was like being a child growing up under the rule of Taliban. And it really is. It's horrifying. Horrific. And sad. Yeah. I mean, her story in particular, which I'm sure is, you know, one in a million in, you know, war-ridden areas. But it's just, it's so unbelievably sad to me that all of this seems to be going forth again.
Yes. So, I mean, and yeah, it was like the Taliban weren't in power anymore, which is a big deal. But they were still inflicting terror upon civilians throughout Afghanistan during this period.
Right.
And, you know, there were a lot of United States casualties of soldiers as well. In 2014, when Obama was president, NATO, which is an intergovernmental military alliance between a bunch of European countries and then I think also Canada and the United States.
Yeah, it's like what I've been seeing referred to as Western allies in all of the articles that I've read.
Yeah,
kind of to clump them all in one.
Yes, and box. Largely like a lot of military powers, right?
Yeah.
And they had been involved in this situation as well. Like, it wasn't just the United States, it was also a lot of these countries who were part of NATO. And they decided in 2014 that they were going to leave this relatively new, you know, the new Afghan security forces to protect its new and fragile government, right? Yeah. And so the U.S. troops would stay on to train and equip them. And so we spent billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah, I remember this well.
In order to train the Afghani soldiers in order to protect their own government so that they would be self-sufficient should we ever decide to leave. Like, that was the plan, right?
That was the plan, and that was also, I think, kind of what Biden and a lot of people were expecting. Like, oh, well, we trained them. Like, they should be, they should be totally equipped. There's no way that there's going to be a weak link.
Mm-hmm. That's the argument that you're going to hear, right? But at that time, so again, the Taliban presence was never gone in Afghanistan. And at that time, when we basically said, like, we're going to largely pull out, we're going to leave a small portion of our troops here to train them with the goal of being pulled out in the next however many years, right?
Right.
So at that point, the Taliban was like, the cool. There's an end date to them being a presence here.
Right.
So they started planning, right? And they started seizing more control and more territory throughout Afghanistan. So then recently, under Trump, the U.S. made a deal with Taliban militants, and they brokered an agreement to fully withdraw U.S. and NATO troops in exchange for a ceasefire and violence reduction, right? They're like, you know you're going to do violence, but just reduce the amount of violence.
Just not as much violence as you were planning.
Less violence, maybe. You know, just a smidge of violence, right?
Yeah, so, I remember the talks of this. We probably talked about it as well, because I remember being like, oh, okay, yeah, you're just going to, like, buy that they agree to this? Yeah, okay.
Right? Like, why would you just trust their word, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is fine.
Don't trust the Taliban.
And there was no clarity on how the demands would be enforced. They didn't even ask, like, okay, like, how are you going to enforce this? And the new Afghan government was not included in the negotiations whatsoever.
Oh, oh.
Like, the U.S. just went in, the Trump administration went in, shook hands with the fucking Taliban. And which, again, I'm just like, how are these, like, USA, like, American patriots cool with the with Trump? They're like, lead dude,
their going number in one guy,
and shaking hands with the fucking Taliban.
They, I'm sure that there are mental gymnastics that his supporters have done to explain that away. I mean, it's the same reason why they thought it was a good thing that he met with Kim Jong-un. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's bizarre.
It is. So the Afghan government was really not happy about this deal because, you know, you can't fucking trust the Taliban to keep their word, right?
Yeah.
And so then this year, under Biden, you see what I did there?
We got
four presidents. The U.S. began to withdraw from the region. They were like, all right, Trump had a plan to pull us out in 2021. Biden said, sounds good to me. We're going to continue going down that path. So he was like, we're going to fully withdraw on September 11th. I want to be fully withdrawn by September 11th, 2021. So, despite, you might be shocked to learn that despite the deal that was struck between the U.S. and the Taliban, the attacks from the Taliban did not stop. And instead, the Taliban have shifted their focus to targeting Afghan security forces and civilians and executing targeted assassinations. So when the U.S. withdrew from the region, and we're not entirely withdrawn, but like a large portion, you know, withdrew from the region, the Taliban almost immediately gained territory and increased their attacks on civilians. Within
because they've been Yeah, they've
five
been preparing.
Regional capitals had fallen to the Taliban with major cities just toppling. They were ready.
They've been planning.
Like, okay.
They've been planning since Trump told them, like, hey, this is what we're going to do. Jesus
I mean,
Christ.
And honestly, they've been planning since 2014. It's just like, yeah, you announced, and then, of course, Trump and then Biden gave them a date, like, to move towards. And they were like, all right, so on this date, we're going to be ready. Like, fuck the deal we made.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah. So, most recent, well, are you kind of, are you in present times right now?
Yeah.
Most recently, the Taliban entered this capital city of, is it Kabul?
Yeah, Kabul.
Kabul. See, I've been saying Kabul in my head, because I think I'm thinking of the word cabal.
But you know what? I think I've heard it said both ways, to be honest.
Okay.
And anybody, you know, if you are, if your family is from there, please write in with a phonetic spelling for us.
Yeah, please let us know how to say it. So they enter the capital of Kabul on Sunday after President Ashraf Ghani left the country for the United Arab Emirates, and panic ensued in the Afghani people who worked with the Western armed forces or agencies, and mass amounts of people rushed to the Hamid Karzai International Airport seeking refuge. And I'm sure that most of you have seen these images or videos pop up on social media. They've been all over the place, but it was absolute chaos and it was tragic. It was
devastating. It really, like, I feel like those images are going to live in my head for the rest of my life.
I couldn't agree more.
When you see people, I you know, what keeps coming to my mind is that saying that's like, nobody puts their child in a boat unless the sea is safer than the land.
Yeah.
And it's like, nobody clings to a United States helicopter that's taking off only to plummet to their death.
Yep.
Unless they believe that the air is safer than the land. They would rather die.
Yeah.
In an actually, like, completely irrational way. That's the amount of fear, right? Is like,
right, you know, you're in survival mode.
Holding on to a plane's wing is not going to, like, save you. You know, it's not rational, it's not doable, but you would rather risk that than be in a Taliban jail.
It's,
you know,
just, oh, it just it makes me just want to go over there and be like, all of you can stay in my apartment. I'll take care of you.
It should make America do that. Yeah. It should make America say, you know, look, whatever you want to say about what was done over there, the point is, we did go in and we did disrupt this and we did leave without being absolutely certain that we had everything in place.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, we couldn't be there forever. I understand that. No one's arguing that we could just stay there forever. But
right.
Like,
and I doubt that there is a situation where we would have gotten this, like, perfectly and nothing bad would have happened. Like, I think that the whole situation in itself, the fact that we started this war to begin with, was going to make it very difficult to pull out of. It's the amount of tragedy and the amount of people that are trying to save themselves. But the U.S. troops were only able to evacuate 2,500 troops, but there will be more,
Were they civilians? Or troops?
I wrote troops, yeah. But I think I meant civilians. But I read that the Taliban is at the airport now. They're at checkpoints. Mm-hmm. So while the U.S. wants to take as many civilians as they can, and they plan on sending more planes and helicopters, now they have to kind of, like, work through the checkpoints that the Taliban have taken over at the airport in order to get there to get the people.
Right. I mean, and again, I want to point out that the Afghan president, he fled the country for his own safety.
Yeah.
However, in doing so, he did effectively hand over control of the nation to the Taliban.
That's exactly what he did.
There is nothing protecting any of these people. And it's very interesting to see, or interesting is the wrong word. Wow. But it's horrifying to see, actually, a lot of these people speak. There was one woman whose name escapes me at this moment, but she is one of the very first female governors in Afghanistan. And she basically said, she's like, I'm just waiting for them to come get me, because they killed her father the year before. They've made multiple attempts on her life. And she's like, it's done. It's happening. There's nothing that I can do. And the same is happening for other high-risk individuals, such as journalists, diplomats, people who have aided the U.S., including interpreters. And the U.S. is prioritizing getting those people out, people who have aided us while we were there. But one, it kind of feels like it might be too little too late.
Yeah.
And secondly, we need to take as many asylum seekers as possible.
Yeah.
As many as fit in this country. And it doesn't matter whether or not they helped us while we were in the region. Like, anybody who needs to get out and request to get out, as many as we can take, we should take.
Yeah.
Period.
Definitely. 100%.
And I do want to say also that experts say that the Taliban is stronger now than at any point in 2001.
Oh, hell yes. Yeah.
It's worse.
They've been stewing and they've been getting angry. And I don't, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we see them as being the bad guy, but they see us as being the bad guy. So they've been angry and stewing for a very long time. And they're very, very powerful. Right. You know what
and
I mean?
And we can have, there's a conversation to be had also about how a lot of these people ended up radicalized, right? And I'm not at all taking responsibility off of them.
No, but there
in any way. But there's a price to be paid for our imperialism, our capitalism.
Yep.
And the things that we do as well as a country. So, again, absolutely not taking responsibility off of the Taliban for the horrific acts of violence that they enact all the time.
But it's important to know the genesis of how people become that way. Just like when we talk about alt-right YouTube or when we talk about, you know, any right-wing stuff, or even when we talk about Nazi Germany and things like that, like there's always an indoctrination and there's a reason that these things happen. It's not like just being evil for evil's sake. Like, you know, we're human. There is like a whole story behind how these things happen.
How do people get radicalized, right? Yeah. And why? And what
and part, how can we prevent it to from happening, you know, in the future? And I think that's why it's important to talk about that, not because it's excusing anyone's behavior, but the more we can understand those groups of people, hopefully the better we will become, better we'll be about dealing with that type of group of people, you know, because clearly we're not handling it very well right now. And one thing that really surprised me was that President Biden stated on Monday that he was squarely behind his decision to withdraw U.S. troops, though he acknowledged the Taliban took control far more quickly than he anticipated. And I just wish there was more to it than that. Like, that just seems like him saying that he was still squarely behind it. Like, I wish there could be some wiggle room there.
I don't think he can say anything else at this point. Like, I don't think he can backtrack now. You know, I think he's locked himself into this position.
But can't you apologize, or not even apologize, but acknowledge when maybe the decisions you made weren't exactly how you hoped them to come out? Like, he can still admit that, like, I had the best of intentions with doing this. I really thought this was going to work this way. You know, I apologize to the people of Afghanistan and to the, you know, United States citizens that are over there. We're doing our best now to, you know, remedy the situation. Like, to me, that's what I would rather hear, is just like honesty about it. But
right. I mean, I wonder,
I'm asking for too much.
And I wonder if there's more going on as well, because I imagine he doesn't want to show weakness for something if they have no way to or intention of correcting it.
That's a good point.
You know
point.
What I mean? Because it's just like, he can't say that and then do nothing if it would be better for him to just stand by his hard line, right? Rather than to say something that he can't follow through on or back up.
Right.
Because people are dying. Like, that's just
the case.
But
that's the thing,
you know?
Is like, I wish he would acknowledge the death. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's just kind of the thing that I feel like is missing, of him just saying, I'm squarely behind it. Like, I just want some acknowledgement of the fact that, like, there are so many innocent people that are dying and being imprisoned right now. Like, I wish that there could be a little bit more about that in what he has to say, but, you know.
Right. I mean, but honestly, I think I feel like I would only want him to say that if he's going to fucking do something.
Oh,
because otherwise,
totally.
Like, if he was just going to be like, sorry this is happening, and then like not do anything. So it makes me wonder what their plan is. And unfortunately, I think that that plan is probably not a whole lot in terms of stepping in. I know that they have sent troops back to help control the situation at the airport.
Right.
But beyond that, I mean,
the point was to get everybody out. So it doesn't really make sense for him to send, you know, he's not going to completely do a 180 and send like all the troops back in. You know, like, I guess that makes sense, but hopefully, I know nothing about military stuff. So hopefully someone's figuring out something.
Well, they should have figured it out already. Like, that's the thing that is so frustrating about this, because also, you know, I know so many people personally who have done tours in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So many people who, even if they came back, their lives are forever changed. They have mental health problems. Close friends of mine.
Yeah.
Mental health problems from being in Afghanistan. Things that they may never recover from. And for them as well, I understand it's not the same as what the people of Afghanistan are going through at all. Please don't think I'm comparing the situations. But I will say also that, like, it must be horrible to see that, like, okay, what was it all fucking
yeah,
for?
Like, why did we do this then? Yeah, that's
what
how,
was it for?
That's what I'd be thinking.
You know, like, it just, it has to feel like that. And it's just a shitty situation. And I know that so many people in the United States join the military because they are trying to move up in the world, right? The military will pay for your schooling. The military will pay for your housing.
Yeah.
And it is an opportunity to get yourself out of a bad situation. I know a lot of people who have done that.
Yeah.
And our military industrial complex, this thing that we give billions of dollars to every year when we can't house our homeless or give people medical care.
Yeah.
We put billions of dollars into this military industrial complex that still fucking preys on poor people.
Yeah.
Who are just trying to better their lives by joining the military because they think it's a way out of a bad situation.
Yep.
And it's horrible all the way around.
Yeah.
And I have more stuff here, but we can talk about it another time. If you have more that you want to talk about, if you want to talk about the Delta variant, that's
yeah,
fine.
We'll
talk more about the Taliban in other episodes, I'm certain.
Yeah. So. I mean, all I really wanted to say about the Delta variant is probably things that you already know. Something that was absolutely astonishing for me to see. I'm trying to mix up my adjectives. I use the word astonishing this time. So in June, our 7-day moving average in the United States of reported cases was around 12,000. By July 27th, the 7-day average reached over 60,000 cases, which is a similar rate to the cases before the vaccine was widely available. So if you are vaccinated, yes, you are going to be more protected than if you are not vaccinated, but you can still spread the Delta variant to someone who is not vaccinated and they could get infected. Keegan and I are recording separately right now because somebody that I work with tested positive for COVID. So just to be sure, I'm staying away from people. I'm staying really masked up, all that kind of stuff. But it's really scary. And we're getting back to a level of numbers of cases that is really, really terrifying. And another thing that really drives me crazy, I watched this great video about this man whose wife has terminal breast cancer, stage 4 breast cancer, and she was having issues and had to go to the hospital. And she was in the hospital and she stayed for like 2 nights, and she should have needed a few more nights, but they asked her to leave because they needed more space for COVID patients. And most of these COVID patients are people that decided not to get the vaccine. And it's really upsetting a lot of people that, you know, the people that are saying COVID isn't real or I'm not really going to get sick, I don't need the vaccine. And now they're like desperately taking up all of the beds and things like that. So this is a desperate plea. I know that probably most of our listeners, if you are able to get vaccinated, have been vaccinated. But if for any reason you have not, I encourage you so, so much to get vaccinated so that we can hopefully someday be done with this pandemic, because at this point, I don't know when it's ever going to end.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so just real talk, hard truth. I know that everything that we just talked about and what everybody in Afghanistan is going through right now and what it must be like in other parts of the world right now, and I know that by comparison, what we're going through is so small.
Right.
And I understand that and I want to acknowledge that first of all. But I will say, mentally, not doing great. Like, I am not doing great. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing good right now. Like, and I think that part of it is this feeling of just never ending dread about our situation.
Yeah.
And it's awful.
It needs
and
to
I
stop.
Just,
I'm really.
I have the credits from Bo Burnham's Inside on a loop in my head.
Yeah.
Where he's just going, it'll stop any day now. And I have to repeat that to myself all the time in an effort to just feel like, okay, this isn't forever. Nothing is permanent.
I know, you know? But like, I've also been watching Last Man on Earth and I'm like, are we all just going to die? Like, what is going to,
you know, if
how
we are,
is this going to stop?
I will say this. If the apocalypse comes, in movies, people's will to live is strong. And I'm kind of just going to be like, look, man, If it comes for me.
That's the thing I'm always amazed with in these apocalypse movies. Like, if there was a zombie outbreak, I would, like, ask for someone to kill me. I'm like, I don't want to do this.
I'm not strong. I'm not fast. I'm not good with a gun or really any weapon.
I'm emotionally fragile. Like, I can't deal with an apocalypse.
After the year we've had, I'm not mentally strong enough for that.
No. I would be like, somebody kill me now because I don't want to be alive for this anymore.
Now, okay, we're going to say all that because we do have a platform with the disclaimer that
this is an imaginary situation.
It's satire.
We are not being serious, but I'm also being kind of serious because, like, I legit wouldn't survive. Like, I would be, and I would be, like, the most insufferable human being to deal with in those times.
Complaining constantly. Me too. I'd be like, it's hot. I'm sweaty.
I'd be like, zombies, take me. Let me become one of you.
I've been walking for 4 days and all I've had is a can of cat food. Go fuck yourself. Like, no.
Of course it's cat food. Oh my God. Yeah, no, that scares me. That scares me. But yeah, please, everybody, continue to wear your masks, especially indoors. Please get vaccinated if you can. If you have loved ones in your life that have not been vaccinated, please gently urge them to do that, to do so. I know how difficult it is, but really that's the only thing that is going to make this fucking thing stop. And it makes me so mad that this pandemic has been so politicized because it could have been over by now.
Yeah.
We were so close.
New Zealand just shut down because they got one COVID case.
Are you serious?
No, we're going back on lockdown. Y'all don't know how to act. And meanwhile, look at us.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, I have people. We have a mask policy inside the store, but yet people, when they try things on, they take their mask off and then they'll come back into the store to grab more clothes. And I'm like, where'd your mask go? Like, keep it fucking, if I have to keep it on all day, you have to keep it on all day.
At the Van Gogh exhibit today, I was also getting like vaguely annoyed at the number of people who were clearly just there to take Instagram photos, which whatever, it's your prerogative. But like the people who would take off their masks so that they could do like selfies,
yes,
and had to be told by these poor employees who are probably making minimum wage, like, ma'am, you need to keep your mask on the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, what are you?
Oh, when people say that they can't try on sunglasses because they can't see what they look like. And I'm like, that's the part of your face that isn't covered. You can see what it looks like. I don't understand. But everybody that tries on sunglasses pulls their mask down to look in the mirror. And it drives me insane. Stop wearing chin diapers. That's another one. Or like just having it over your mouth and having your nose hang out. It drives me freaking nuts. And then they're wearing a mask. So I don't feel like I can be like, please wear your mask. Like, I feel like an asshole being like, can you fucking wear your mask correctly, please? Like, I hate it.
Yeah, I've had enough.
I'm done.
Enough.
let's move to New Zealand where they have one case.
Dude, I'm about to fuck off to the forest. I swear to God, you can catch me there. I'll be just like hanging naked by the lake, right?
Dude,
like,
that
sounds pretty good at the moment.
Down, just living naked by a lake. Fuck yeah.
Or a river would be better because it's running water, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah, river, yes. Some nice fresh water, live off that. We can get like some solar panels on a house.
Just bacon bread all day. We weren't meant to live like this,
no,
okay?
We weren't.
This is some bullshit. Fuck capitalism. Anyway.
With that being said, we... all right, well... That's all that we have for you all today. Thank you so much for listening to another What's in the News episode. We have missed you. I hope you've missed us
indeed.
As well. We are back. If you have any news stories that you want us to cover next week, please feel free to email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or shoot us a direct message on Instagram at @angryneighborhoodfeminist. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page and chat with the other listeners on the group page. And if you haven't already, the thing that helps us the most is if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I actually looked and I think we only have, like, we don't even have like 200 reviews. We definitely have more than 200 listeners. I'm putting y'all on blast right now. So those of you who have not left us a review, we would greatly, greatly appreciate if you would do so. All right. That's all we got for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye.